Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 3, 2017, August 13, 2021. We will show our first service on this first day of the week with a song entitled, A Shelter in the Time of Storm. Yes, rock. In Him we hide, a shelter in the time of storm, secure whatever ill betide, a shelter in the time of storm. Oh, yes, rest of love, in a weary land, weary land, the weary land. Oh, yes, where is the rock in a weary land? A shelter in the time of storm. A shade by day, defense by night. A shelter in the time of storm. No fears alone, no foes afraid. A shelter in the time of storm. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, a weary land, a weary land. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, a shelter in the time of storm. The raging storms may around me husky, a shelter in the time of storm. Never leave a safe retreat, a shelter in the time of storm. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, a weary land, a weary land. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, a shelter in the time of storm. Oh, rock divine, oh, refuge dear, a shelter in the time of storm. Be thou our helper ever near, shelter in the time of storm. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, weary land, a weary land. Oh, yes, there's a rock in a weary land, a shelter in the time of storm.
Revival and Reformation, Part 1. We're going to start with Isaiah 54. We're going to be talking about Revival and Reformation, starting with Moses coming out of Egypt, the first movement for Israel. About 1500 B.C., the second movement was at the cross of Yahshua and the disciples, and that movement lasted for 1800 years. Now keep that in mind. That movement went through the Dark Ages, and it emerged in 1844. No, it emerged in 1833 with William Miller, bringing the second movement to a close in 1833 as the angel of the sixth candlestick. Now keep in mind that this second movement of Yahshua started with his apostles at the cross. It started with the first angel of the first candlestick of Revelation 7. Now keep this in mind. The second movement involved the six angels. I mean, the five angels of the five candlesticks there in Revelation 1 with Yahshua as the one seen walking in the midst of the seven candlesticks, and with the seven stars in his right hand that represent the ministers of the seven candlesticks. So, the second movement started with Yahshua and the apostles, and it set up the kingdom of grace, and it started with the fourth beast of Daniel's vision, the nondescript beast representing pagan imperial Rome, that was in charge of Jerusalem there. And so Yahshua come and engaged the world that was controlled 100% by Babylon in the form of pagan Rome, and the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They made a confederacy. They made a confederacy at right there in Jerusalem around the cross with the imperial Rome, the fourth beast. That fourth beast with the ten horns on his head that represents the kings of all of the nations, and the kings of all nations were in confederacy with this beast. Babylon is the author of it, and the house of Judah, the Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were the priesthood of this confederacy of Israel. And so Yahshua come to set the captives free from this confederacy of the house of Israel linking up with the beast, the old dragon, and his organization, which is called Mystery Babylon. And so that movement started in 1827. Well, actually, it started, it kicked off at the Pentecost of 31 AD, and Yahshua was hung on the cross. After he was hung on the cross, went back to heaven, he commissioned the disciples to start the second movement in the earth from the coming out of Egypt 1,500 years earlier. And so that second movement went from 33 AD, when Yahshua died on the cross, and 31 AD to 33 AD. Okay, now he went back to heaven, and so you mark 33 AD to 1833 AD, when William Miller called at the sixth hour, and he had this in this time of the sixth seal, and he had this he was the angel of the sixth candlestick, Philadelphia, Revelation 3:7. And so there you have it, 1800 years, and what was all involved, and there was 1800 years. You had five angels of the seven that are mentioned in Revelation 1. Of the seven candlesticks, you had five angels that had their part in the second movement. You had Ephesus, you had Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, and that's what you had involved in the second movement that Yahshua started. And so, the first angel was Ephesus, which gave it to the disciples. They were in charge of that candlestick, Paul being more notably in charge of it. And then the second candlestick, Smyrna, Martin Luther in 1500 AD was in charge of that candlestick. And then the Presbyterian John Knox was in charge of the third candlestick, Pergamos. And then John Wesley in 1725 was in charge of the fourth candlestick, Thyatira, the Methodist reformer coming out of the Catholic Church. And then you had Alexander Campbell was in charge of the fifth candlestick, and that was Sardis there in 1810. And he was the fourth reformed church. They called them movements, but they were reformed doctrines that they taught to restore the house of Israel back to one purified kingdom. That's what these seven churches were for, these seven candlesticks were for. They were to work one after the other, restoring doctrine until they got all the seven doctrines restored back to the house of Israel. William Miller, he had the sixth doctrine, prophecy, the 2300-year prophecy in 1833. Ellen G. White had the three angels' message and Babylon is fallen doctrine, and the cleansing of the sanctuary, Daniel 8:14, on the Day of Atonement, and that's what we got looking at within about 3 weeks, the Day of Atonement, and we're looking for that antithetical Day of Atonement one day when the outpouring of the Holy Spirit takes place again. But William Miller represented the third movement this side of coming out of Egypt, 1500 B.C. He represented the third movement in 1833 to 1844. And then Ellen G. White and the Adventists represented the fourth movement. You find all these here groups of laborers in Matthew 20, verse 1 through 6. Talks about these five groups of laborers that headed up these five individual movements over a 3,500-year period of time. Ellen G. White was the leader of the fourth movement. There's only one movement left, and that was the group five, Matthew 20, verse 6. And that was the head of the movement that I'm put in charge of at this time. So I'm having been put in charge of the last movement of this earth's history. This is part of responsibility, folks. This is why we're teaching and preaching on revival and reformation. We desperately need it, if for nothing else at this time, more than any time in the history of this world. Isaiah 54, verse 1. M.L. Andreessen, Adventist minister, wrote the three little book, this Isaiah the Gospel Prophet, that was published in the Sabbath School of Court in 1929 by the Adventist General Conference Authority. And so, we can use that information out of Isaiah the Gospel Prophet to write the first volume of the Shepherd Rod. And he said, this is the information for the judgment of living, for the revival and reformation. That started in 1929 with the Adventists, and it was to go on until the end of time. Okay, let's go to, timely greetings. One, volume 1, number 10. And we're what brings success to revival and reformation? This is text of address, October 12, 1946, by V.T. Hutter. Let's go ahead and read it. We're going to also use those 13 chapters from Isaiah 54 through 66, along with this series of the Revival Reformation. Let's get into see what V.T. Hutter has to offer about this. Okay, it says that in Life Sketches, page 425, we read, I have been deeply impressed by the scenes that have recently passed before me in the night season. There seemed to be a great movement, a work of the revival going forward in many places. Our people were moving into line, responding to Yahweh's call. My brethren, Yahweh is speaking unto us. Now this is Ellen G. White speaking. She's talking to the Adventist elders. She said, Yahweh is speaking unto us. Here is a forecast of a great movement. And this great movement is this last one that Yahweh put the house of David in charge of starting. And we started this in 2002 at Kermit, Texas. A movement that is to carry on a work of a successful revival in many places. Here it is also saying that the people will respond to Yahweh's call, and that this envisioned work of the revival is to be carried by a divinely organized movement, not by the denomination though, and not by a man here and a man there. For the movement is Yahweh created, not devised by men. We have through the years seen numerous persons and groups of persons in different parts of the Adventist world who at one time or another did stage what they termed a revival and reformation. But not one of them have ever been able to accomplish much of anything. One by one, they end up by quitting in disgust. Rather than being revived, reformed for the better, they, after each such effort, slide away from Yahweh and closer to the level of the world standards. Clear it must be unto every wide, open, wide truth seeker that the revival which life sketches, predicts, and pictures is this layman's movement. For aside from this movement that is now on foot, slowly but steadily sweeping away the rubbish throughout the Adventist world, we have never as yet in the existence of the author's writing and the last sketches seen another such an organized movement carrying such a revival as this. For the Bible contains the complete plan of the salvation for all humanity. How do I know this? I know it because this story begins with creation and ends with the earth made new. Between the first and the last pages of the Bible, then lies the complete formula for the man's salvation and redemption. And if such revival reformation as here envisioned is to take place in the world, between those two events, creation and the new earth, then the material and example of such a work must be found somewhere in the pages of the Bible. Before we read what the Bible has to say on the subject, I think we should first concretely define the words revival, reformation. For the revival, as the dictionary gives, to restore, to refresh, to renew, to reawaken, to reestablish, and for reformation, the dictionary gives this definition: to make better morally, change for the better. So 2011, Yashira told me, I felt real good when I got out of bed. I felt like I was completely brand new, full of energy, 73 years old. And he said, restore. The voice just spoke out and said, restore. And I said, wow. The voice spoke to me and told me to restore. First, restore my health. And my health has been a 7-year program, and I haven't put all the effort into it that I should have, but I'm having to now at the last moment, because this is the final year for restoring my health, to put myself on top of it so we can start this great revival and reformation that is going to go throughout the whole world. Well, Yeshua or righteousness defines these terms of speech as follows. A revival and a reformation must take place under the ministration of the Holy Spirit. Revival and reformation are two different things. Revival signifies a renewal of the spiritual life, a quickening of the powers of the mind and heart, a resurrection from the spiritual death. Reformation signifies a reorganization, a change in the ideas and theories, habits and practices. Reformation will not bring forth the good fruit of the righteousness unless it is connected with the revival of the Spirit. Revival and Reformation are to do their appointed work, and in doing this work, they must blend. Page 154, 1926 edition. Okay. So what is the difference between revival and Reformation? Revival means to bring the spiritual qualities back to life, to quicken the mind and the heart, for the upbuilding of the spiritual phase of the life, for the reestablishing, for the repairing. And Reformation means for the changing of the oneself for the better, for the reorganizing of the moral powers with the divine guidance. In the scriptures, there is but one example, type, parentheses, of such a revival and reformation as the one here predicted. We find it recorded in the books of Haggai and Zechariah's prophecies. For you remember that those ancient Jews were by the Cyrus, king of Persia. Now I have a little bit of good information that I want to share with you about this here surname. The surname and surnamed. I want to read you something from the scriptures on that, just that, because Cyrus was surnamed. And I want to read you something here from the scriptures. Isaiah 45:4 is your first mention of surnamed in the scriptures. And it has to do with Cyrus. I just read to you now about Cyrus. And here in Timely Greetings, Volume 10, Number 1. And he says, you remember that those ancient Jews were by Cyrus, king of Persia, released from their captivity as soon as Babylon fell. He made a decree that they should go back to their homeland to rebuild the desolation and ruins. Now, this is where we're at today. We're getting ready for that today. Donald Trump is antitypical Cyrus. And so, I'm going to read to you about Isaiah 45. Let's start with verse 1. Thus saith Yahweh unto his anointed, unto Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden to subdue nations before him, and I will loose the loins of kings to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut. I will go before thee and make the crooked places straight. I will break in pieces the gates of brass and cut in sunder the bars of iron. I will give thee the treasures of darkness and the hidden riches of the secret places that thou mayest know. But I, the Yahweh, which call thee by thy name, am the Elohim of heaven. Isaiah 45:4. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel mine elect. Now keep in mind that Jacob's name was changed from Jacob to Israel, meaning overcomer. So when you get that name Israel given to you again today, it means that you have overcome the world, the flesh, and the devil. You've been purified, sanctified, made white, and you have the three seals of Yahweh's approval. That's the only way that you can get this sacred name, Israel, given to you today. You will not be called that unless you have earned it. So it says in Isaiah 45:4, he's talking to Cyrus, for Jacob, my servant's sake, and Israel, my elect, I have even called thee by thy name. Now we represent this Jacob's servant. And we represent this Israel, Yahweh's elect. And Yahweh is telling Cyrus, I have even called thee by thy name, for the sake of Jacob my servant, and Israel my elect. Now when he says elect, he's talking about the 144,000. He says, Isaiah 45:5, I am the Yahweh, and there is none else. There is no Elohim beside me. I girded thee, though thou hast not known me. I have that they may know from the rising of the sun from the west that there is none beside me, Adi Yahweh, and there is none else. Now your key here is in Isaiah 45:4. For Jacob my servant's sake, and Israel my elect, I have even called thee by thy name, I have surnamed thee, though thou hast not known me. So, now Donald Trump is the antitype of Cyrus of old. And so therefore this prophecy applies to him directly today in the present tense. This prophecy is a live prophecy. It's meeting its fulfillment now in the form of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, his surname, now let's go back now and read some more about this surname. Donald Trump is also a surname. His name Trump is in the Bible. And it's in there a couple of times. I believe it's in 1 Corinthians 15, and it's in, and 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17. All right, now it says in Mark 3:16, and it says in Simon, he surnamed Peter. Now that Peter's birth name was Simon. But Yahweh surnamed him Peter. Mark 3:17, and James the son of Zebedee, and John the brother of James, and he surnamed them Barnabas, which is the sons of thunder. Luke 22:3, then entered Satan into Judas surnamed Iscariot. Okay, so now Judas' name, his surname was Iscariot. That's when they call him Judas Iscariot. So we know exactly who we're talking about, because there's other people with that name Judas. That was their surname. Judas, but then in case of Judas Iscariot, that's when they call him Judas Iscariot, because his surname is Iscariot. Acts 1:23. And they appointed two, Joseph, called Barsabbas, who was surnamed Justice, and Matthias, Acts 4:36. And Joseph, who by the apostles, was surnamed Barnabas. Okay. Who by the apostles was surnamed Barnabas, which is being interpreted, the son of consolation. So if you come along and you're a preordained person with a surname Joseph, but the meaning of your word, of the name, means consolation, then they give you no doubt a Hebrew word name called Barnabas. And so they give you a name that has that meaning in it. Acts 10:18. And called and asked for the Simon, which was surnamed Peter, was lodged there. Okay. Acts 15:22. Then pleased it the apostles and elders with the whole church to send chosen men of their own company to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas, namely Judas, surnamed Barsabbas, and Silas, chief man among the brethren. Now notice that all these preordained people called to prophetic appointments that Yahweh has preordained to work in the kingdom for the building up of the kingdom, and this is these men are surnamed because they had a special job to do and helping people to become sanctified. And so Donald Trump is the first president out of 45 presidents that was surnamed from the scriptures. He's the only one surnamed. That's a prophetic figure. And the reason why he was surnamed is because he's going to clean up and drain the swamp of all the alligators and the snakes and the venomous serpents and crawling, poisonous crawling animals out of the swamp. He's going to clean out Washington, D.C. He's going to completely drain that swamp of all obnoxious creatures that are poisonous and dangerous and that live off one another and live off of those that happen to encroach on their territory. That's what Washington, D.C. is. It's a swamp jungle of every foul and unclean bird and hateful animal on earth is right there in that swamp. And that's where he sent Donald Trump, right in the middle of that swamp. And he's surnamed from the scriptures. He has a typology. He's the only one in all of government that's ever been identified as such. All right, let us go back now to Time of Reading, Volume 1, Number 10. It says, the king has specially decreed that the rebuilding of the temple and the reestablishing of the worship of Yahweh of the heaven should be done faithfully and speedily. Well, Donald Trump is doing this. Just had hurricane in his 8th month as president. They had the most violent hurricane here in Texas that has just cost billions of dollars and displaced 1 million people. Now that's major, folks. And Donald Trump has made 2 visits in 1 week down there. And his last visit, he was seen with a group of ministers praying over him right there in Houston. Right there in that meeting place in Houston. He had ministers surrounding all around him, praying for him to bring healing, call healing, and restoration to America. And Yahweh, I know, heard their prayer. And so this is where we're at, folks. A revival of the spiritual part of the nation, the temple, and its system of the worship was their chief concern. But according unto Ezra 4:24, Cyrus's decree, and also another that was issued a few years later, were both frustrated. And in the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia, the work completely ceased, and apparently there was no hope of ever resuming again. Then it was that the prophets Haggai and Zechariah were called to their prophetic office and commissioned to revive and to reorganize the builders for the desired temple project. So Haggai belongs to Zechariah, and Haggai and Zechariah, I know Zechariah belongs to Cyrus, and Haggai belongs to Darius, the two kings of Persia that ruled over Babylon, overthrew Babylon. You had Haggai and Zechariah. So in Haggai 1:1 and Zechariah 1:1, the happy and surprising result was that within 4 short years, the stately spiritual edifice was quickly finished, whereas all the previous and strenuous efforts of kings and people covering a period of over 30 years completely failed. Okay, so we had a feeble attempt by our presidents before Donald Trump. I've always said there was a 28-year period there between 4 presidents that were supposed to, they made gestures toward restoring America. And they were evil presidents. There was a George Bush Sr., there was a Clinton, there was a George Bush Jr., there was an Obama. And those 4 presidents covered 28-year period. Donald Trump comes in here, and he won the presidency in 2017. He has a 4-year mandate to get this temple restored and redone. And I believe that we're in that 4-year mandate, starting January the 20th, when he took the office of presidency. He's done some awesome things in this world. And the United States already. So, it looked like we may be in that antitypical four-year period where DeVos made a decree. Now, keep in mind that Mike Pence represents antitypical DeVos, Donald Trump's vice president, and he's the general. In the top, DeVos was a general to Cyrus. So when Cyrus got killed in battle later on and down in Egypt, then DeVos, after his son reigned about a year, after Cyrus' son reigned about a year, DeVos took over as king of Babylon. And so, therefore, it says under DeVos, his second year, this temple was completed, or given the decree to restore it, and within 4 years it got done. So, folks, we're right here at that place in time. Let us now realistically consider why the builder's efforts and the king's decree at first failed and why at last they succeeded. Before Haggai and Zechariah were called unto the prophetic office, many of the Jews returned from Babylon unto Jerusalem. Although the majority remain in Babylon, that is, the builders voluntarily went to build only because the captivity had ended, and because the king had decreed that the temple of Yahweh should be built. But both the builders and the king's efforts were a complete failure. All came to naught. Then it was that through his prophets Haggai and Zechariah, Yahweh directed their work, and then it was that they quickly finished. In other words, not before Yahweh took the reins in his own hands through the spirit of prophecy did their work prosper. In fact, sacred history proves that nothing has ever prospered in the Yahweh's work without the living spirit of the prophecy in his midst. So, as I told Alan DeLong, I said, you and I represent the Zechariah and Haggai to Brother Johnson, 2002. I told him I knew exactly who he was, what part he was playing. And so, Yahweh's not through, I don't believe, with Alan yet. I don't think he's through with him. I think Alan has to have this experience what he's got right now. He's got too much knowledge. And if he's fulfilled his position that I believe that Yahweh has given him, then we're not through with the rest of the story yet, if that be the case. Let's go ahead now. For example, Moses understood from the childhood up to that his lot it was to deliver the children of Israel from the Pharaoh's brickyards. And when he was fully grown up and thoroughly trained in the courts of Pharaoh and saw himself strong and capable, he quickly undertook to deliver the enslaved Hebrew host, killed one Egyptian, got into an argument with the Hebrew, then deserted everything, and without hope of ever coming back, he fled the country in complete defeat. 40 years later, after Yahweh endowed him with the spirit of prophecy, he returned and triumphantly led the Hebrew captives out of Egypt. Folks, we're looking for that deliverance again today. Okay, because the 144,000 represents the Hebrew captives in Egypt again today, and they're in the Adventist Church all over the world. These special incidences make crystal clear that no matter how hard men may try to bring about a revival and reformation among the Elohim's people, their efforts are doomed to failure even before they started. If Yahweh does not entreat through his prophets, does not himself through his prophets take charge of the work. Well, Yahweh started this revival reformation in 1929 with V.T. Harter. Now, this revival and reformation, folks, has had a foundation, foundational work laid for it. And from 1930, where that's the starting date, officially, and in 2010 you have 80 years. You had equals 80 years to 2010, and so I'll be 80 years old according to the Roman time in 2018. January 2018, I'll be 80 years old. And Yahweh's already impressed me that at the age of 80 years old is when I will be ready to take the antitypical work of Moses. Believe it or not, the antitypical work of Moses, when he was 80 years old. When Moses was 80 years old, he was then ready and prepared to take and lead the children of Israel. It looks like that I have been held at bay for all these years myself. And so, folks, just right here in front of us, these special incidences make crystal clear that no matter how hard men may try to bring about the revival reformation among other people, their efforts are doomed to failure even before they start if Yahweh does not himself, through his prophets, take charge of the word. So we know by the evidence of the history now, prophetic history, dating back from 2017 back to 1930, we know that from that time there has not been a revival reformation among the spiritual house of Israel, the Adventist Church. The divisions, branch divisions, no one had that commission. All right. Now, as to what took place in the way of the Reformation for the ancient house of Elohim had been built, let us read. Ezra 6:19-21. And the children of the captivity kept the Passover upon the 14th day of the first month, for the priests and the Levites were purified together, all of them were pure, and killed the Passover for all the children of the captivity, and for their brethren the priests, and for themselves, and the children of Israel, which were come again out of the captivity, and all such as had separated themselves unto them from the filthiness of the heathen of the land, the seek Yahweh Elohim of Israel did eat. Let us now connect Ezra's record with that of Nehemiah. Nehemiah 10:28-32, and the rest of the people, the priests and the Levites, the porters, the singers, and Nethinims, and all they that have separated themselves from the people of the land, unto the law of Yahweh, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone having knowledge and having understanding, they prayed to their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in Yahweh's law, which was given by the Moses, the servant of Yahweh, and to observe and do all the commandments of the Yahweh or Elohim, and his judgments and his statutes, and that we should not give our daughters unto the people of the land, nor take their daughters for our sons. And if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. Also we made ordinances for us to charge ourselves yearly and with the third part of a shekel for the service of the house of our Elohim. Here you see a record of the complete revival and reformation such as had never been. For the things that were revived are these. Number one, the house of Yahweh was rebuilt and the sacred services reinstituted. Okay, we have the creation calendar now. So we are without excuse. We've got that instrument. And we can know when to keep all these holy days at the appointed time according to heaven's time. Number two, the old race were rebuilt and the city inhabited. The city of Jerusalem was rebuilt and the waste places around Jerusalem and Israel was rebuilt and inhabited. The reforms which took place were, number one, the priests and the Levites were all purified. Number two, all the children of the captivity separated themselves from the filthiness of the heathen. Number three, all entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in Yahweh's law, to observe his judgments and his statutes, not to give their daughters unto the people of the land, nor to take their daughters for wives for their sons. Number four, they made Sabbath observance a strict rule. And number five, they liberally pledged support the work of Yahweh with their means. Such a genuine and complete revival reformation had never been launched since man fell into sin. That the revival and reformation of that day is a type of revival and reformation to take place in our day is principally noted from the fact that the prophecies of both Haggai and Zechariah intermingle dual events, one to take place in their day and another to take place in our day. Says Yahweh, Haggai 2:21-23, speak unto Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth, and I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. And that day saith the Yeshua of the host, but I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith Yahweh, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Yeshua of the host. This is Yeshua the son talking. And this Zerubbabel is a governor. The governor is a key word of Judah. Well, I'm the one that's been placed in charge, this antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, with the surname David. Now get that. David is a surname. And Cyrus was a surname. I have the genealogy and the bloodline, the descendants of the house of David as a son of David. As Yahshua was identified as a son of David. I am also identified as a son of David with the generic title of a Jezreel, meaning a master prophet. All these different characters, Zerubbabel and Joshua the son of Joseph and Joshua the son of Nun, and all those titles dovetail into one place, and that is into the name Malachi. Elijah is Eliyahu. Now that Eliyahu is two parts of Yahweh's name given to this man called Elijah. Elijah had no pedigree. They don't know where he came from. They don't know nothing about his background. That was like Melchizedek. Didn't know where he came from. Had no background. Had no pedigree. And Elijah was surnamed Eliyahu. Well, that's why the title that I have, antitypical Elijah, surnamed David. Identified as David. Well, this Jezreel, the master prophet, the oldest son of Hosea, is a master prophet. And his name Jezreel, the valley of Jezreel, is a surname for this master prophet. That could be Zerubbabel, he could be Ezekiel, he could be Joshua the son of Josedek. He can come straight with the name David, or he can come with the name Malachi, or Eliyahu. Those are all surnames for this master prophet Jezreel. That's the title that's been placed upon this office here with Elijah David. Here we are told that in the day Yahweh destroys the strength of the heathen kingdoms, which event is yet future, he makes ancient Zerubbabel a signet of a Zerubbabel, and the day the strength of the kingdoms is destroyed. Again we read Zechariah 2:5, 11, 13. For I said to Yahweh, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her, and many nations shall be joined unto the Yahweh in that day, and shall be my people. And I will dwell in the midst of thee, and thou shalt know that the Yahweh of the host has sent me unto thee. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Yahweh, for he is raised up out of his holy habitation. For the wall which the Jews built around Jerusalem in Zechariah's day was of stone, but the one here predicted is to be of fire, far superior, rendering absolute security to the inhabitants that are within. Folks, this is the one that we're called to build, the house of David right now. Moreover, no other people, and we have our commission in Amos chapter 9. To raise up the tabernacle of David that has fallen down after many generations, it says so. This is our commission. None besides the Jews were committed to join the builders of Jerusalem in his day, but in our day many nations are to join. Furthermore, at the fulfillment of these prophecies, Yahshua requests that all flesh reverently and solemnly know that he is raised up out of his holy habitation, that he is now visiting the earth, Zechariah 2:8. For thus saith Yahshua the host, after the glory, that is, after the church eternal, hath he sent me unto the nations. So it would be after this, this your house of David has been sanctified and anointed, and have entered into immortality, that's when the church is sent unto all the nations. I've never seen this before. Which spoils you, for that he that touches you touches the apple of his eye. In the Zechariah's day, the Yahweh did not send anyone unto the nations after anything. But in our day, he is the sin antitypical Zechariah, interpreter of the Zechariah's prophecies. Now, I'm the only one that's been given that gift today to interpret all of the prophecies of the prophets of old and of the New Testament unto the nations that are ruling and exploiting his temple, and those nations are to come become a spoil and shall know that the Yahweh has sent him. Okay, you get that? In the Zechariah day, Yahweh did not send anyone unto the nations after anything, but in our day he is a sin antitypical Zechariah, and so this Zechariah is also the same thing as antitypical David, the master prophet Jezreel, is what it is. Zechariah 2:12, and the Yahweh shall inherit Judah his portion in the Holy Land, and shall choose Jerusalem again. Holy Spirit spoke to me today and said, unholy alliance. And I said, well, I've never had that come to my mind that I can remember. Unholy alliance. He said, yes. He said, that's what the purified kingdom that came out said, it has to come out of an unholy alliance. So the purified kingdom develops in an unholy alliance situation. It started in the Adventist Church. So the Adventist Church, because of the dual leadership represented by these double span of horses that is pulling that fourth church in Zechariah 6 representing the Adventist Church, because of that double leadership in the Adventist Church, that constitutes the unholy alliance that has existed until those grizzled horses was cut loose, leaving one purebred team of horses, the bay horses, as the lone came hooked to that fourth church, the Adventist Church. And so now we have a purified doctrine. We're unrestricted. We don't have no one that is putting any kind of restrictions or pressure on us to what we can say and preach and teach. We can teach what the Holy Spirit gives us to. We can record it. We can put it out to the world. And there's no restrictions at all at this office here. So this constitutes a holy alliance between heaven and earth. But before, it was an unholy alliance because we were connected to that grizzled horse chain that was nondescript. The pagan, heathen, atheist, infidels, they didn't know what they believed. That's what Brother Johnson ended up being. Just a heathen atheist infidel. Yahweh took all of the knowledge and wisdom and understanding that he ever once gave him on anything, took it all away from him. And so that right there, Yahweh disconnected this, because he told us in 2 Corinthians 6:17, he said, come out from among them and be you separate and touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. Well, we did that in 2:17, and that's when the unholy alliance was broken. But then we had this here Alan DeLong that tagged along with us, that was delivered with us, and he kept up this unholy alliance connection with us. And so Yahweh had to finally separate for him. 2014, he severed him and that last unholy alliance from our midst. And once we got that separated, then we've been free ever since. Okay. So he says there in Zechariah 8:7-20-21. Thus saith Yahshua the host, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country. Thus saith Yahshua the host, it shall yet come to pass that there shall come people, and the inhabitants of many cities, and the inhabitants of one city shall go to another, saying, let us go speedily to pray before the Yahshua, and to seek the Yahshua of the host. I will go also. So it says, the prophet's attention was directed to a time when the Yahshua is to gather his people from both the east and the west, unto a time when one city's inhabitants will invite another to go into the Holy Land. This same prophecy appears in both Isaiah chapter 2 and Micah 4, chapter 4. Zechariah 8:22-23. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Yahshua, the host in Yahushua, and to pray before the Yahshua. You can also find that in Hosea chapter 3, verse 3-5. Thus saith the Yahshua the host, in those days shall come to pass that 10 men shall take a hold out of all languages of the nations, even take a hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that Yahweh is with you. Obviously, the 10 men are a representative figure of the universality, as are the 10 virgins of Matthew 25. If so, then the church as a body will speak all the languages of the nations. They're taking hold of the one that is a Jew and saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that Yahweh is with you, definitely points out that someone, a descendant of the apostolic Jews, the apostles, 12 apostles and their converts, will proclaim Yahweh's end-gathering message in the time of the end, and that he will be recognized as such. Let us now turn to Zechariah 9:9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and right upon an ass, and upon a colt the foal of an ass. And these prophecies is brought to view the first advent of Yahshua. Zechariah 9:10. And I will cut off the chariot from Ephraim and the horse from Jerusalem, and the battle bow shall be cut off, and he shall speak peace unto the heathen, and his dominion shall be from sea even unto sea, and from the river even unto the ends of the earth. That is, Yahweh was to bring the ancient kingdoms, Ephraim and Jerusalem. Jerusalem representing Judah, the 2 tribes, and Ephraim representing the 10 tribes in the north, with the headquarters of Samaria. That is Israel and Judah. Ephraim and Jerusalem is Israel and Judah to an end. And then to turn to the Gentiles and speak salvation unto them. Thus shall his dominion be over all the earth. Well, that's what's happening right now. Donald Trump is paving the way for this the gospel to be preached to the Gentiles of the earth, the United States in prophecy of the earth. And so this is where we're at. The ground is being laid. It's being plowed. It's being cultivated. The ground is being laid for the Gentiles to hear this message. We just got to get ready at the appointed time to give it to them. Zechariah 12:3-9. And in that day will I make Yerushalayim a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. In that day shall the Yashir defend the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, and he that is feeble among them at that day shall be as a David, and the house of David shall be as a Yahweh, as the angel of Yahweh before them. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Yerushalayim. Oh well, I'll tell you what. We're at the end of our study. This is our contest. This is the 11th hour call. It's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Precious Yah, take my hand. Lead me on, let me stand. Precious Yah, take my hand. Lead me on, help me stand. I am tired, I am weak, I am worn. Through the storm, to the night, in the old, to the light, take my hand, precious Yah, lead me home. My way grows dear, precious Yah, linger near. When my life is almost gone, hear my cry, hear my call, oh my hand, lest I fall. Take my hand, precious Yah.